Hi, I'm Mel Majoros. I am a 7-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you. Finding friends on Twitter and Facebook is what I love to do. And today is no exception. Today we have Howard Bressler. He is a survivor and an author of The Layman's Guide to Surviving Cancer. How are you today, Howard?
Well, Mel, thank you so much for having me on. I'm very happy to be added to the ranks of cancer warriors. It's a brigade I'm proud to serve in.
Yes, exactly. We could start our own, island, I think. There's so many of us, so our own country.
More and more survivors, thankfully, added to that island every day.
Grateful. So let's start with when you found out you were diagnosed and then jump into your book.
Well, I found out that I was diagnosed with acute promyelocytic leukemia in the summer of 2000. It was about a month or so before my younger daughter's first birthday. And I had been sort of feeling run down and worn out for a couple of weeks. And after a series of tests, finally had a bone marrow biopsy done. And it was determined that I had APL and went into the hospital the next day and started my treatment pretty much immediately and went through chemo for almost, I'd say, the better part of a year after that.
Wow. So now you are cancer-free after 14 years?
Yeah, I am cancer-free. I was very fortunate to be part of a clinical trial that was done at that time on APL. It subsequently became the standard treatment for that kind of leukemia, and it works. So I was very fortunate in that regard. And thankfully, all these years later, I'm cancer-free, and I get to see my daughters grow up.
Now, is that a rare form of leukemia? Because I don't know much about that. I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's a rarer form of AML. It afflicts fewer numbers of people, and the effective treatments of it were, I think, slower in coming than other forms. But they've made tremendous strides over the years. And like I said, the clinical trial I was part of is now the standard treatment protocol for APL, and thank God it works quite well.
So you were on the forefront of I don't want to say the cure, but the path to having cancer survivors becoming cancer-free. You were part of that.
Yeah, I think we're all hesitant to use the word cure because it's so definitive. But certainly I was on the cusp of a much more effective treatment for this kind of leukemia. So I guess if I was going to get it, I got it at a very opportune time.
Weren't you lucky, right?
No, you know, I'll tell you something. It's hard when you're in the whirlwind of a cancer diagnosis and treatment to see where the lucky part is, where the blessing part of it is.
Yes.
But it's in the retrospect when you look back and say, my God, what would have happened to me if it was 10 years earlier or if I didn't happen to be in a hospital where they were doing that clinical trial or whatever it is. And so you get to look back sometimes and see that things really did turn out to be blessings or fortunate, even though we went through a difficult experience.
Now, what is, looking at your website, wecansurvivecancer.com, what is Stevens-Johnson syndrome? I've never heard of that
before. Stevens-Johnson syndrome is a type of disease that when you have reactions or when you have these flare-ups, it causes the epidermal layer of your skin to separate from the dermis. Essentially, your skin can blister up, it comes off, they treat you kind of like a burn patient. And the normal treatment for it is sort of a high-dose steroid to arrest it and then try to alleviate it. But it's pretty onerous. In many ways, it was worse than going through the cancer. It's more painful.
Wow.
And you just have to learn how to avoid certain things and deal with stress and things like that. And thankfully, I haven't had an occurrence of that for a few years. But, yeah, that instructs you in humility as well.
And being a lawyer, you're away from a lot of stress, right?
Oh, yeah, there's no stress in my profession. That's why I chose it. It's one of those stress-free, high-paying positions that everyone loves.
Well, we're glad that you're around. So tell me how you went from cancer survivor attorney to writing your book, The Layman's Guide to Surviving Cancer, from diagnosis through treatment and beyond. I mean, a lot of people want to write books, but how did you say, you know what, people need to hear this?
Well, it was kind of an evolutionary process because even when I was still in the throes of my treatment and in the years subsequent to that, I sought out and worked with individual cancer patients. I wanted to be able to use whatever wisdom and experience I had developed as a result of going through that and learning the process to help other patients get through that. And so I would visit the hospital, or I would be referred to people, as I'm sure you are, when someone you know knows someone who gets cancer. And I would work with people and counsel with them individually over the years.
Right.
And so the idea of a book ruminated in my head for a long time. The outline was kind of kicking around the various aspects of my brain for a while, and I kind of knew what I wanted to do, but I just didn't get around to putting it down on paper. And then I was counseling with a high school friend who unfortunately passed away, and when he did, that I think lit the fire under me to really sit down and put what I'd been thinking and doing onto paper and trying to do it in a form that would be available en masse. And that's what I did. And once I sat down to write it, and all these ideas and all these experiences just sort of started flowing out of me, 4 or 5 months later, the initial draft of the book was done.
That's it?
Then it went through the revision process and getting it in front of oncologists and getting their points of view and their endorsements. And the revision process took a while, and the publication process. But I'm happy to say that it didn't take that long, a couple of years from start to finish. And then the book, thankfully, has received a lot of good feedback from patients who are benefiting from it, from hospitals and oncologists who've made it available to their patients. And that's been very gratifying to me.
Now, did this book just come out?
I came out the end of June of this year. Yeah, so it's only had a few months.
Wow. So now did you self-publish, or did you go through a publisher?
Through a publisher.
Oh. How hard was that process? Because I know a lot of people, either they try to go through a publisher and that doesn't work for some people, but you went through, or they self-publish and you went through a publisher. How did that work for you?
It's a lot of legwork and being willing to accept an awful lot of rejection. Especially when you're not famous and you don't have a big platform, and just knocking on a lot of virtual doors and feeling out every contact you have. And it was interesting as I went through the process and in another aspect of the book as well, because there were things I needed to get permission to quote or to cite in the book. And you find more and more how the cancer experience has touched and affected people in every sphere. In every aspect of life, everyone has either had it, had a family member or a friend who had it, unfortunately may have died from it, whatever it is. And so I think that the book touched a nerve among certain people. And there were some people who, in fact, said, well, you don't have to pay us to cite this thing in your book. Just send me a copy of the book when you're done. I'd like to see it. A lot of those kinds of reactions. So in an interesting way, the topic of the book and the way I approached it opened some doors.
Well, that's pretty amazing. Like, who did you go to, and they just said, you know what, just you can quote our book or a movie.
To tell you the truth, I'd rather not say specifically because I don't know what kind of leeway they had not to charge me the fees for those things.
Right. Okay.
but there were a few in there who said this is a really great cause and it touches me and you don't have to pay us a license fee for this. So without naming names, that's what I'm going to say about that.
Always the attorney, Howard. Always the attorney.
it's ingrained into you.
Yeah, that's, I mean, working in TV for so long, it's hard to get that kind of information into a book or a television show without having, as you know, lots of paperwork and, you know, having like 800 people like go through the process of saying yes or no. So that's pretty awesome. But we'll say nothing about it.
You know, one of the things you have to do in writing also is just to write without ego and to take the criticism and the corrections and the revisions that you get from other people and not consider that it's a reflection on your writing skill. And even to take the rejections as not a reflection on you, but rather just wherever publishers may be or editors may be. But it's a process. And I think because I've written so much in my legal career over the course of years, that you just learn to write that way and accept people's comments for what they are.
Right. And you have to be that way, especially if you're writing your cancer story or, you know, something about treatment. People are going to have their opinions as far as your writing technique or something. And they're not going to say, well, that happened to you. Well, we'll just cross it out because we don't want to hear it. It's just a matter of how they view the book. That's their job as an editor. And I think a lot of people may not understand that when they're going through the writing process or the publication process, I should say.
It's such a personal and intimate process, especially when someone undertakes to share what are very intimate parts of their lives, their mortality and the nakedness of what they go through. it's a very personal thing, and I think that people are resistant when someone says that this shouldn't be in there, this should be somewhere else, this is too strongly worded or whatever. And you have to sort of step back and be objective about it. And one of the reasons why my book is not a personal odyssey, it's not a story about me, which I think would be boring, is because cancer is such a personal experience that
right.
It's hard for someone to relate to the specific story of somebody else. But rather, I used anecdotes from my experiences to support some of the things that I was saying and some of the guidance that I was given, and as well mixed in a fair amount of scientific research and broke down studies in a way that hopefully people will be able to understand.
Now, how hard was that going through the, I mean, I know you're an attorney, so you do have to go through a lot of, looking through things and...
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of evidence.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm telling you. Looking through evidence and getting that kind of thing. How hard was that? Getting all that information, talking to oncologists, was that more of a difficult process or was that like one of the more easier things to go to find out?
Well, it was one of the more time-consuming aspects of it, but I have done over the course of my career a fair amount of toxic tort work, which is chemical exposure type things, and that's involved a lot of people who claim that their diseases, are, including cancer, are caused by their exposures.
Right.
So I already had experience knowing how to look at an epidemiological study or a laboratory study and not only understand it, but also be able to describe it in terms that lay people can understand. As lawyers, we have to do that for juries. We have
right.
to often do that for judges who may not be experienced in certain scientific or legal areas. And so that wasn't as hard for me as perhaps it would have been. And in many ways, and this is not a knock on doctors, doctors are very good in describing things in medical terms,
but
they're not always great in describing them in ways that ordinary people who don't have medical degrees can understand. I had, I guess, the fortune of being both a cancer patient and a toxic tort lawyer and being able to meld those two things together to make, hopefully, a lot of the issues that I discuss more understandable to people.
Well, and I think you're right in that fact as far as doctors go, because doctors see you as the patient, but they don't think of what they do in layman's terms. They think of more the medical procedure, like you said. I had a friend who had a kneecap surgery, and the doctor was like, you know what, just let me draw what we did so you know what I'm talking about, because he said, mm-hmm. I did this kind of stitch and blah, 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 and you're just kind of looking at him like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. But, you know, when
doctors... That's with all professions. It's too broad a brush to say that
right.
they're not good. But
I'm not saying they're not good. It's just hard for them, for some of them, as being a cancer patient, to go through that layman's terms where sometimes you have to stop as a patient and say, can you explain that to me so that I can understand it? Because they're used to all their medical terms and, you know, maybe they're dropping lingo like nobody's business, as a lawyer maybe, but you have to remember mm-hmm. that who your audience is and who you're talking to. And sometimes in that moment, as a cancer patient, cancer survivor, caregiver, you know, just listening to all that medical terminology is just a lot of white noise. And what you want to hear, like you said, is layman's terms, like, okay, will this make me sick? Don't talk to me about, you know, say low white blood count instead of neutropenia, you know, that kind of thing. Just get that into your layman's terms like you do in the book, and it's a lot easier for patients and caregivers, survivors, to understand.
Well, I think that you just touched on what I think is one of the most crucial points for patients and for their caregivers, which is the concept of proactivity. When a lot of terms get thrown at us when we're patients, a lot of terms that no one ever hears unless they get sick with a certain kind of illness or an injury,
yes.
And it's incumbent upon us as patients or as caregivers to make sure that we are proactive and understand what
Absolutely.
We're being told and understand the ramifications of what is either going to be done to us or not done to us,
mm-hmm.
what our rights are in terms of accepting or questioning or rejecting that, and making sure that what's told to us is stuff that we actually understand. So we have a grip on what our rights are and what's going to happen to us. And I think a lot of patients are either overwhelmed
yes.
or scared
mm-hmm.
or just intimidated by the white lab coat.
I think you're right. And I know even friends of mine who know that I'm a cancer advocate and advocate upon doing what you're saying. And also, if you don't like your doctor and you're not comfortable, you know, they basically work for you. So you can fire your doctor and find somebody that you're more comfortable with. A lot of people are just like, well, they're my doctor, so they know what they're talking about. It's like, well, if you know, even if you have that little bit of doubt of whatever or you're questioning, ask questions, get a second opinion. If your doctor says that you shouldn't get a second opinion, then you need to get a different doctor, I think.
No, I agree with that wholeheartedly. And mm-hmm. I don't think any doctor worth her salt is going to be
right.
opposed to that. But that's just a really important thing that not everyone understands. And mm-hmm. a lot of times, getting a second opinion, if nothing else, will simply confirm that what your initial
right.
doctor told you is right, and that
exactly.
treatment protocol they're recommending is the right treatment protocol. And then at least the patient goes away with a peace of mind that what they're doing is the best thing, and that their diagnosis was the right diagnosis, and that they're doing the right things to get better. That in and of itself can have certain ameliorative effects on a patient and just make them more confident and more at ease with what they're dealing with.
Right. Now, I'm not sure if you talk about it in the book, but one of the things I always say is if you're going to a doctor appointment, if you're newly diagnosed or whatever, if you can't find someone to go with you, which I highly recommend taking notes, that person, or bring, you know, everybody has an iPhone or a smartphone now, or even just get a recorder, record mm-hmm. everything the doctor's saying. If you're in that cancer patient zone where you're just like, oh my God, this is so scary, you can always listen to it later. And, you know, the nurses and the doctors are there to answer your questions later on, even if you're just like in such a freak out mode. You know, when I was first diagnosed, all I heard was like, it's cancer. And then I heard the Peanuts voices, wah, 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 tumor, wah, 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 staging. So, you know, at that moment when you're diagnosed, you know, you will be obviously freaked out. I don't know anyone who isn't, who's just like, oh, all right, whatevs. But, you know, in the coming appointments, make sure that you know, like you said, the layman's terms, make sure you know what your course of treatment is, what you you understand it. You don't want to be on the operating, you know, going into the OR and the doctor going, well, we're going to do this. And you're like, what? Well, that's
yeah,
not what.
Those are a couple of points that I do address in the book,
excellent.
And they're very important. And
mm-hmm.
the first one, having a cancer buddy,
yes.
a cancer advocate, someone who is capable of going with you, if it's someone who has some medical training, all the better. But even if it's just someone who can give you some objective feedback or be there sort of as a sounding board when all these terms are going on around your head, which is kind of how it feels when
yes.
you've just been diagnosed. Number one, to have someone who can go with you and be both a moral support and an intellectual one. And also to record in some way the conversations that you have. For a lot of people, I think recording is actually better because it's
yes.
hard to simultaneously take notes and hear things the way that you need to hear them. And as with good doctors being open to second opinions, I can't think of any good doctors who would have an objection to you recording what they're
right.
telling you about your disease and your proposed treatment. But it's a great device to be able to go back later on and make sure that you understood everything. One other thing that I recommend
yes.
to people, simply because good doctors tend to be busy, is to try to gather together whatever questions you have
absolutely.
Into an outline or a series of questions so that when you get together with your oncologist, you can sit down and make sure you're covering all the things that you know you need to cover. As much as our doctors want to be available to us,
mm-hmm.
they're not always because
right.
they have other patients, amazingly, besides us.
I'm not the only person in their life. That's crazy, but okay.
So it's good to just organize your thoughts, and
mm-hmm.
you can have your cancer buddy run through those things with you and go over and see if they have any input on the kind of things that you need to understand beyond just the treatment, but
right.
The other things that you need to organize in your lives. That doctors are aware of because they see patients go through those things. And those are good guides to have to prepare the rest of your life, your home life, your
mm-hmm.
family life, for the treatment that you're going to be going through.
And one of the things you touch on in your book, which is great, is nutrition. And when I was diagnosed, I had to ask to talk to a nutritionist, which, you know, that was 7 years ago. So I know a lot has changed in 7 years. But, you know, obviously no processed food, but I wanted to know what was good as far as the chemo that I was taking, what I should eat, what I shouldn't eat, because some the nurses and the doctors touch upon that, but they may not go into a full spectrum of what is good for you. So I recommend either talking to a nutritionist, or if you can find one, you know, that's not through the hospital, find one on your own that you talk to, or even just another cancer survivor who said, you know what, I've been through this, and this is what I could eat. I always say, this is what I could eat, but that may not work for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's very important. And I had a similar experience when at the time I was going through the cancer, there wasn't a lot offered to me or said to me in terms of what I should or shouldn't be eating, other than just make sure you eat. Keep your calories up. Keep your strength up. And so I probably ate what I could eat, a lot of things that I probably shouldn't have eaten. But I don't know what your experience was when I was going through the treatment. I really couldn't taste anything. I didn't have a lot of appetite. So basically whatever I could eat, I just ate. But a lot of hospitals now, I think, are more savvy. They offer nutritional advice to patients. And the one caveat I will give when it comes to going to a nutritionist outside of the hospital's auspices is that there are a lot of things that can be contraindicated by a conventional course of cancer treatment, in particular certain types of supplements. There are some types of cancer treatments that are designed to block the action of certain types of vitamins or certain types of naturally occurring things because they lessen the effects of the cancer treatment. And so going to a nutritionist who is divorced from your oncologist can be detrimental unless they coordinate with each other. And so the caveat I give to anyone is whatever you're going to do, change in diet, supplementation, whatever it is, just make sure you run it past your oncologist and make sure that they are on board and that nothing that you're going to do is contrary to your treatment plan.
Absolutely. I mean, I had a lot of friends who were like, oh, yeah, you should try this supplement and that supplement, you know, vitamins or whatever, nutraceuticals, as they're called now. And I'm like, well, you know, I appreciate the thought, but I'm going to stick to the normal regime that my doc, you know, at the time you're being treated, I think I was on like 20 different medications and vitamins and whatnot. And they were all doctor approved and everything. But I'm like, one more pill, seriously. But
yeah, it can get a little overwhelming. But the big issue there is that some of it just might be dangerous to a cancer patient being treated in a way that's not dangerous to someone who's not going through that.
Exactly.
And it's certainly not malevolence on the part of
of course not.
But they just may not know that. The other thing I tell people is to try as much as possible to simplify, especially if you're having trouble digestively, which a lot of us do when we go through this stuff, is to try just to simplify how you take your food in, whether you're eating soup instead of heavier meals or whatever it is, but to try to get your nutrition in a way that's more palatable and just easier to deal with. And I do address a lot of that in the book as well. That chapter is a pretty lengthy chapter with a lot of suggestions in it.
Excellent. These recipes look fantastic.
Oh, on the website, on the blog. Yeah, some of them are really great. I've used them even subsequent to cancer. They're good and they're simple and they're helpful, and I've gotten some good feedback from some of the people who've actually tried them.
And that's the other thing. You have people who want to help you make meals and stuff. Well, you know, Nana's lasagna may be great for someone with low tolerance for tomato sauce and acidic foods. Not a good idea. So having recipes such as in your book, you can say, you know what, I can't really tolerate this, but here's a list of things that you can make for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And it should go even beyond just the things that you can't eat for whatever reason. There are sometimes, and you're through chemo or radiation, when you feel so sick, even just smelling something, even the thought of something around you can just make you feel ill. And that gets back to the issue of patient proactivity.
Yes.
Someone might want to bring you Nana's lasagna, and you don't want to offend them, so they bring it, and you stick it in a freezer because you can't look at it.
Yes.
But patients need to learn how to express what they need. And the bottom line is, the people who want to help us want to know how they can best help us.
Exactly.
And so they're not going to be offended when you tell them, don't make that lasagna, make me this instead. They're going to be thankful that you're telling them that, because otherwise they're not going to be helpful to you. And that's exactly what they want to do.
And that's true. And that's another thing that I would tell people. Like, you know, we all have our pride, but I think once you're diagnosed with cancer, if someone offers to help you, then I think you should take that help. Now, swallow your pride. If someone wants to bring you food, help you out. Because I think a lot of people were like me and like, well, I don't think I want anybody's help. I can tough through this, and so can my fiance. But, you know, looking back, it's like, I know people wanted to help me. And, you know, hey, if somebody wanted to cook me spaghetti or something, because that's pretty much mostly what I ate the day after chemo, then yeah, do it. They want to, you know, drive you to the doctor's office. If your significant other or your chemo buddy can't, then, you know, have them help you.
Yeah, again, cancer is such a personal thing. And I find that there are two extremes of the spectrum. There are those among us who don't want to talk about it at all,
mm-hmm.
don't want to deal with it any more than they absolutely have to. And so they may be a little bit more reticent about enlisting help from other people.
Right.
Then there's the other end of the spectrum. People like you, people like me.
We can't shut up about
certain,
it.
Yeah, well, we find a certain catharsis both in talking about it and
yes.
trying to help other people deal with it. And those people have less trouble asking for help or getting people involved. Even for someone who is resistant to it, the bottom line is they're going to have things in their lives that are upset by this new mm-hmm. paradigm in their lives. And so an easy way to deal with that is perhaps to make a one-time list of all the things I need to do on a weekly basis. I need to drive this carpool and do this shopping and X, Y, and Z.
Right.
And then you put a couple of very close friends or family members in charge of doling those out to whomever, to a different friend, to a different family member.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you kind of take the onus off of yourself to be asking people and doling out assignments to people, and you entrust it to that cancer buddy or to that caregiver or that friend who's willing to undertake that for you, and then they take the responsibility of organizing those things for you. That's a much easier way of doing it for someone who's reticent about asking for help.
That's a great idea. See, I'm sure that's in the book. You're full of all sorts of good ideas.
I try.
So we were talking on the phone last week, I believe. Now you have a bunch of hospitals have this book available to their patients.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Several of the major cancer centers have been sent this book: Sloan Kettering, MD Anderson, Dana-Farber, University of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
To the extent to which they are making it available, I don't know. But I know patients who've gone to some of these hospitals and who said, "I've seen your book there."
That's excellent.
Which also is gratifying to me. And I wrote it with an eye toward doing exactly that. This is certainly not going to pay my kids' college tuition. And it wasn't designed to do that.
Right.
So I've sent it out to a lot of organizations and cancer centers and hospitals in the hope that they'll make it available to their patients. And hopefully it'll be helpful to people that way.
Now, I know it just came out, but have you gotten any feedback from someone who has not been a part of the book, who has said anything about, oh, this is a great resource and everything? Besides me, of course.
Thank you. I've gotten really good feedback, both from patients and from oncologists, and interestingly, people who've never personally experienced cancer have read through the book and have told me how there are aspects of it that apply to getting past obstacles and encountering adversities in any sphere of life. Because there are parts of the book that deal with spirituality,
mm-hmm.
Not necessarily on a religious level, but some of
right.
it, and attitude and the importance of that, the importance of experiencing joy even during difficult times. And those are concepts and applications that transcend just the cancer experience.
That's very true.
And so I'm getting a lot of feedback like that. But I don't know if you got a chance to see any of the reviews, but I'm getting a lot of really good good feedback, both within and without the oncological community, which is, again, very fulfilling to me.
Excellent. So are you going to go on a book tour? Do you have your PR guy all lined up?
Well, I'm doing a lot of the PR myself.
Excellent.
And I've done several speaking engagements and have given a couple of interviews like this one, and just trying to keep the momentum behind it. And I've had some good press. The New York Law Journal did something recently.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the local papers in New York have done some stuff, which, again, is very gratifying to me, and it helps get the word out. And I am available, and I have done speaking engagements, and not just limited to the cancer field, but
right.
certainly touching on that a lot. The more I do, and I will say this, the books that I sell fund the effort that I have put in to supply this book to various organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So one feeds the other. And, yeah, I hope to keep doing that.
Well, of course, because, I mean, there's only good that can come out of having a book like this to help people. It's kind of your way of paying it forward to people who you'll never meet, which is why I do what I do.
You know, every year my firm runs a blood drive.
Oh, nice.
It's wonderful. And each year when they do it, and this was done not accidentally, but kind of haphazardly from my perspective, the first year that they did it and the email went around to people asking them to donate blood, I took it upon myself to send an email to everyone in the firm, essentially explaining how those few minutes of time mm-hmm. will touch another person's life who you will never meet, but
exactly.
they will think of you every single day
exactly.
because you saved their lives. And as soon as I sent that out, the number of people enrolled to donate blood shot up. that's my mother's lessons in Jewish guilt, I think.
Well, that's
paying
excellent.
It forward. But that's exactly the point that you're making, is that this is a way of paying it forward and touching the lives of people that we may never meet. Perhaps mm-hmm. they'll reach out, and perhaps they won't. It doesn't really matter
right.
as long as they get something good and positive and helpful out of this work.
And Howard, I know you're a lawyer. You're not surprised that you were able to talk for 30 minutes.
Well, like you said, getting me to talk is not the hard part. Getting me to shut up is the hard part.
Well, shut up, Howard. Hold on. I'm going to wrap up like I usually do. WeCanSurviveCancer.com is where we can find more information about the book, and you can also find it on Amazon and check your local bookstores if you want to shop local. Hold on, Howard. I'm going to wrap up like I usually do. This is Mal Majoris. I'm the Cancer Warrior. You can always find me on Facebook because I am a Facebook junkie. Check out my blog, thecancerwarrior.blogspot.com. And as always, life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. Sending you good vibes. It's the Cancer Warrior on EmpowerRadio.com.